I want the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear a report from John Russell about wine and outer space. Later, Alice Bryant answers a question from a learner in this week's Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. This week it is A Retrieved Reformation by O. Henry. But first,
artist Young Chien remembers many emotional times during the height of last year's coronavirus pandemic in Wuhan, China. One memory is of seeing poorly written instructions for new patients placed on the window of a silent hospital receiving area. She also remembers watching a worker in protective clothing using strong chemicals to disinfect an empty hospital hallway. Now, Young is turning those memories into artwork to save the memory of Wuhan's 76-day lockdown that changed the lives of about 11 million people. To express what I've seen in a realistic way, this is the responsibility I've given myself. I also hope that much of the history should not be forgotten, she said. Young felt helpless in the face of an unknown virus quickly spreading through her hometown in January 2020. People in the city were fearful as officials suddenly ordered them to stay in their homes and stopped public transportation on January 23rd. 2 days later, Young began volunteering with a group that took protective clothing, masks, and other supplies to hospitals. Over the next 4 months, she and another volunteer provided about 90,000 sets of protective clothing and around 450,000 face masks. Young took requests from many people in the community, giving them much-needed supplies from medicine and disinfectant to food. She did not sleep much because the work often went into the early hours of the morning. Her first post-pandemic artwork was called Reception. The idea came from her experience of going with a mother and daughter to a hospital in early February. The two had developed signs of COVID-19 after the father died at home from the disease. The mother and daughter then asked for help on social media. Young saw their message and found a hospital willing to accept them. But she was told that no emergency vehicles were available. With public transportation closed, the only solution was to bicycle to the hospital, with Young leading the way. When they arrived, Young saw instructions for new patients attached to a window. Some of the instructions were written by hand. Hospital workers would point to the window instead of answering questions. Young carefully reproduced the event in an oil painting. A second oil painting with deep blue and black colors followed. It was based on a picture of a worker disinfecting a hospital hallway. It is in such a severe situation, but even in this atmosphere, there are still people who stand up for us and protect us, Young said. Soon after sending the mother and daughter to the hospital, Young developed a high temperature and cough and feared she had the coronavirus. She went to a hospital to get tested and began writing her will. After what she calls the longest hour of her life while waiting for the results, she was told she did not have COVID-19. A year later, Wuhan has largely returned to normal. Its streets and stores are filled. Others stay out all night dancing. Only the face masks people wear suggest the pandemic's lasting effects. What I see is the unity of our city, our nation. I find that I am really very proud of being a Chinese, Young said. An art show she organized last year brought another 23 artists with 60 pieces of artwork related to the coronavirus. Wuhan media and citizens have praised Young's efforts. A friend of Young's, businessman Michael Liu, said the show crystallized every touching moment of the pandemic. Unifying art and thoughts and taking action is something that many of us cannot do, he added. Young is currently working on a wall-size aerial image of Wuhan under lockdown. Individual citizens are represented by small black dots. It is an expression of their unity in surviving the crisis as well as unseen pain. Young still feels that pain when speaking with locals and survivors who have suffered emotionally or moved away from social life. Some people are slowly trying to recover, just to come out of this shadow, Young said.
It tastes like flowers. It smells like a campfire. What is it? It is a $6,000 bottle of Petrus Pomerol wine that spent a year on the International Space Station. Researchers in Bordeaux are examining the 12 bottles of wine as well as 320 pieces of grapevines that returned to Earth in January. They say the wine and grapevines are part of a longer-term effort to make plants on Earth better resist climate change and disease. Alcohol and glass are not usually permitted on the International Space Station. Each bottle was packed inside a special steel container during the journey. At a special tasting this month, 12 wine experts tried one of the space-traveled wines at the Institute for Wine and Vine Research in Bordeaux. They tasted and smelled the wine alongside a similar bottle from the same year that had stayed on Earth. The tasting was blind, meaning the experts did not know which wine they were drinking. Nicolas Gomme is the head of Space Cargo Unlimited, the company that arranged the experiment. He said the experiment studied the effects of the lack of gravity on the wine and vines. "I have tears in my eyes," Gomme told the Associated Press about the experiment. Jane Inson is a wine expert and writer. She said the wine that remained on Earth tasted a little younger than the one that had been to space. Chemical and biological study of the wine's aging process could help scientists find a way to age fine vintages, the grapes or wine produced during one season. That information came from Dr. Michael Lebert of Germany's Friedrich Alexander University. Lebert was an advisor on the project. The small pieces of vine, which are known as canes in the grape-growing business, not only survived the journey, but also grew faster than vines on Earth. They were unaffected by limited light and water. Once researchers understand why this happened, Lebert said that could help scientists develop stronger, healthier vines on Earth. Such information could also help create a way to grow grapes or to make wine in space. I'm John Russell.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Minnie in China. She says, "Hello, dear VOA. I'm a fan from China. I'm confused about nutrition and nutrient. Is there any difference between them? What do they each refer to?" Hello, Minnie. If you read a lot about healthy living, you probably come across the words nutrient and nutrition often. The short answer to your question is that nutrients are specific, while nutrition is much more general. Think about it this way. Several nutrients together in your food make up your nutrition. However, one nutrient by itself is not nutrition. Nutrients are the individual substances in food that humans and animals need to live and grow. Vitamins, minerals, proteins, and carbohydrates are examples of nutrients. Nutrients are measurable. For instance, if you read the packaging on a food product, you can see exactly which nutrients it contains and in what amounts. Plants, too, need nutrients to live and grow. Plant nutrients are found in or added to soil. The soil contains substances like phosphorus and nitrogen. Nutrition is the process of eating the right kinds of nutrients over time in order to support growth and stay healthy. So, it is a more general term for a person's overall food intake. Nutrition is also the word for the study of nutrients in food, how the body uses them, and the relationship between diet and health. Because people have different dietary needs, some might need more of some kinds of nutrients, while others need less. So nutrition is measured differently than nutrients are. Finding out whether someone is getting the right nutrition for their body involves examining a person's individual needs and diet over time. That's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Alice Bryant.
A retrieved reformation. In a prison shoe shop, Jimmy Valentine was busily at work making shoes. A prison officer came into the shop and led Jimmy to the prison office. There, Jimmy was given an important paper. It said that he was free. Jimmy took the paper without showing much pleasure or interest. He had been sent to prison to stay for 4 years. He had been there for 10 months. But he had expected to stay only 3 months. Jimmy Valentine had many friends outside the prison. A man with so many friends does not expect to stay in prison long.
"Valentine," said the chief prison officer, "you'll go out tomorrow morning.
This is your chance. Make a man of yourself. You're not a bad fellow at heart. Stop breaking safes open and live a better life.
Me? Said Jimmy in surprise. I never broke into a safe in my life.
Oh, no,
the chief prison officer laughed.
Never. Let's see. How did you happen to get sent to prison for opening that safe in Springfield? Was it because you didn't want to tell where you really were? Perhaps you were with some lady and you didn't want to tell her name. Or was it because the judge didn't like you? You men always have a reason like that. You never go to prison because you broke open a safe.
Me? Jimmy said. His face still showed surprise. I was never in Springfield in my life.
Take him away, said the chief prison officer. Get him the clothes he needs for going outside. Bring him here again at 7 a.m. And think about what I said, Valentine.
At 7:15 on the next morning, Jimmy stood again in the office. He had on some new clothes that did not fit him and a pair of new shoes that hurt his feet. These are the usual clothes given to a prisoner when he leaves the prison. Next, they gave him money to pay for his trip on a train to the city near the prison. They gave him $5 more. The $5 was supposed to help him become a better man. Then the chief prison officer put out his hand for a handshake. That was the end of Valentine, prisoner 9762. Mr. James Valentine walked out into the sunshine. He did not listen to the song of the birds or look at the green trees or smell the flowers. He went straight to a restaurant. There he tasted the first sweet joys of being free. He had a good dinner. After that, he went to the train station. He gave some money to a blind man who sat there asking for money, and then he got on the train. 3 hours later, he got off the train in a small town. Here, he went to the restaurant of Mike Dolan. Mike Dolan was alone there. After shaking hands, he said, I'm sorry we couldn't do it sooner, Jimmy, my boy. But there was that safe in Springfield, too. It wasn't easy. Feeling all right?
Fine, said Jimmy. Is my room waiting for me?
He went up and opened the door of a room at the back of the house. Everything was as he had left it. It was here they had found Jimmy when they took him to prison. There on the floor was a small piece of cloth. It had been torn from the coat of the cop as Jimmy was fighting to escape. There was a bed against the wall. Jimmy pulled the bed toward the middle of the room. The wall behind it looked like any wall. But now Jimmy found and opened a small door in it. From this opening, he pulled out a dust-covered bag. He opened this and looked lovingly at the tools for breaking open a safe. No finer tools could be found anyplace. They were complete. Everything needed was there. They had been made of a special material in the necessary sizes and shapes. Jimmy had planned them himself, and he was very proud of them. It had cost him over $900 to have these tools made at a place where they make such things for men who work at the job of safe breaking. In half an hour, Jimmy went downstairs and through the restaurant. He was now dressed in good clothes that fitted him well. He carried his dusted and cleaned bag.
Do you have everything planned? Asked Mike Dolan.
Me? Asked Jimmy, as if surprised. I don't understand. I work for the New York famous bread and cake makers company. I sell the best bread and cake in the country.
Mike enjoyed these words so much that Jimmy had to take a drink with him. Jimmy had some milk. He never drank anything stronger. A week after Valentine 9762 left the prison, a safe was broken open in Richmond, Indiana. No one knew who did it. $800 were taken. 2 weeks after that, a safe in Logansport was opened. It was a new kind of safe. It had been made, they said, so strong that no one could break it open. But someone did and took $1,500. Then a safe in Jefferson City was opened. $5,000 were taken. This loss was a big one. Ben Price was a cop who worked on such important matters, and now he began to work on this. He went to Richmond, Indiana, and to Logansport to see how the safe breaking had been done in those places. He was heard to say, I can see that Jim Valentine has been here. He's in business again.
Look at the way he opened this one. Everything easy, everything clean. He's the only man who has the tools to do it. And he's the only man who knows how to use tools like this. Yes, I want Mr. Valentine. Next time he goes to prison, he's going to stay there until his time is finished.
Ben Price knew how Jimmy worked. Jimmy would go from one city to another, far away. He always worked alone. He always left quickly when he was finished. He enjoyed being with nice people. For all these reasons, it was not easy to catch Mr. Valentine. People with safes full of money were glad to hear that Ben Price was at work trying to catch Mr. Valentine. One afternoon, Jimmy Valentine and his bag arrived in a small town named Elmore. Jimmy, looking as young as a college boy, walked down the street towards a hotel. A young lady walked across the street, passing him at the corner, and entered a door. Over the door was the sign, "The Elmore Bank." Jimmy Valentine looked into her eyes, forgetting at once what he was. He became another man. She looked away, and brighter color came into her face. Young men like Jimmy did not appear often in Elmore. Jimmy saw a boy near the bank door and began to ask questions about the town. After a time, the young lady came out and went on her way. She seemed not to see Jimmy as she passed him. "Isn't that young lady Polly Simpson?" asked Jimmy.
"No," said the boy. "She's Annabelle Adams. Her father owns this bank."
Jimmy went to the hotel, where he said his name was Ralph D. Spencer. He got a room there. He told the hotel man that he had come to Elmore to go into business. How was the shoe business? Was there already a good shoe shop? The man thought that Jimmy's clothes and manners were fine. He was happy to talk to him. Yes, Elmore needed a good shoe shop. There was no shop that sold just shoes. Shoes were sold in the big shops that sold everything. All business in Elmore was good. He hoped Mr. Spencer would decide to stay in Elmore. It was a pleasant town to live in, and the people were friendly. Mr. Spencer said that he would stay in town a few days and learn something about it. No, he said he himself would carry his bag up to the room. He didn't want a boy to take it. It was very heavy. Mr. Ralph Spencer remained in Elmore. He started a shoe shop. Business was good. Also, he made many friends, and he was successful with the wish of his heart. He met Annabelle Adams. He liked her better every day. At the end of a year, everyone in Elmore liked Mr. Ralph Spencer. His shoe shop was doing very good business, and he and Annabelle were going to be married in 2 weeks. Mr. Adams, the small-town banker, liked Spencer. Annabelle was very proud of him. He seemed already to belong to the Adams family. One day, Jimmy sat down in his room to write this letter, which he sent to one of his old friends. "Dear old friend, I want you to meet me at Sullivan's place next week on the evening of the 10th. I want to give you my tools. I know you'll be glad to have them. You couldn't buy them for $1,000. I finished with the old business a year ago. I have a nice shop, I'm living a better life, and I'm going to marry the best girl on earth 2 weeks from now. It's the only life. I would never again touch another man's money. After I marry, I'm going to go further west, where I'll never see anyone who knew me in my old life. I tell you, she's a wonderful girl. She trusts me. Your old friend, Jimmy." On the Monday night after Jimmy sent this letter, Ben Price arrived quietly in Elmore. He moved slowly about the town in his quiet way. He learned all that he wanted to know. Standing inside a shop, he watched Ralph D. Spencer walk by.
"You're going to marry the banker's daughter, are you, Jimmy?" said Ben to himself. "I don't feel sure about that."
The next morning, Jimmy was at the Adams home. He was going to a nearby city that day to buy new clothes for the wedding. He was also going to buy a gift for Annabelle. It would be his first trip out of Elmore. It was more than a year now since he had done any safe-breaking. Most of the Adams family went to the bank together that morning. There were Mr. Adams, Annabelle, Jimmy and Annabelle's married sister with their two little girls aged 5 and 9. They passed Jimmy's hotel, and Jimmy ran up to his room and brought along his bag. Then they went to the bank. All went inside, Jimmy too. for he was one of the family. Everyone in the bank was glad to see the good-looking, nice young man who was going to marry Annabel. Jimmy put down his bag. Annabel, laughing, put Jimmy's hat on her head and picked up the bag.
"How do I look?"
she asked.
"Ralph, how heavy this bag is. It feels full of gold."
"It's full of some things I don't need in my shop," Jimmy said. "I'm taking them to the city, to the place where they came from. That saves me the cost of sending them. I'm going to be a married man. I must learn to save money." The Elmore Bank had a new safe. Mr. Adams was very proud of it, and he wanted everyone to see it. It was as large as a small room, and it had a very special door. The door was controlled by a clock. Using the clock, the banker planned the time when the door would open. At other times, no one, not even the banker himself, could open it. He explained about it to Mr. Spencer. Mr. Spencer seemed interested, but he did not seem to understand very easily. The two children, May and Agatha, enjoyed seeing the shining heavy door with all its special parts. While they were busy like this, Ben Price entered the bank and looked around. He told a young man who worked there that he had not come on business. He was waiting for a man. Suddenly there was a cry from the women. They had not been watching the children. May, the 9-year-old, had playfully but firmly closed the door of the safe, and Agatha was inside. The old banker tried to open the door. He pulled at it for a moment. "The door can't be opened," he cried. "And the clock, I hadn't started it yet." Agatha's mother cried out again. "Quiet," said Mr. Adams, raising a shaking hand. "All be quiet for a moment. Agatha," he called as loudly as he could, "listen to me." They could hear, but not clearly, the sound of the child's voice. In the darkness inside the safe, she was wild with fear.
"My baby," her mother cried. "She will die of fear. Open the door. Break it open. Can't you men do something?"
"There isn't a man nearer than the city who could open that door," said Mr. Adams in a shaking voice. "My God, Spencer, what shall we do? That child, she can't live long in there. There isn't enough air, and the fear will kill her." Agatha's mother, wild too now, beat on the door with her hands. Annabel turned to Jimmy, her large eyes full of pain, but with some hope, too. A woman thinks that the man she loves can somehow do anything.
"Can't you do something, Ralph? Try, won't you?"
He looked at her with a strange, soft smile on his lips and in his eyes. "Annabel," he said, "give me that flower you're wearing, will you?" She could not believe that she had really heard him, but she put the flower in his hand. Jimmy took it and put it where he could not lose it. Then he pulled off his coat. With that act, Ralph D. Spencer passed away, and Jimmy Valentine took his place.
"Stand away from the door, all of you," he commanded.
He put his bag on the table and opened it flat. From that time on, he seemed not to know that anyone else was near. Quickly, he laid the shining, strange tools on the table. The others watched as if they had lost the power to move. In a minute, Jimmy was at work on the door. In 10 minutes, faster than he had ever done it before, he had the door open. Agatha was taken into her mother's arms. Jimmy Valentine put on his coat and picked up the flower and walked toward the front door. As he went, he thought he heard a voice call,
"Ralph!"
He did not stop. At the door, a big man stood in his way.
"Hello, Ben," said Jimmy, still with his strange smile. "You're here at last, are you? Let's go. I don't care now."
And then Ben Price acted rather strangely.
"I guess you were wrong about this, Mr. Spencer," he said. "I don't believe I know you, do I?"
And Ben Price turned and walked slowly down the street.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.